This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. One of the rare bipartisan moments in Washington the past couple of 3 years has been criminal justice reform. The First Step Act, it was called. Cuts to mandatory minimum sentencing was its big provision. A less well-known and less well-resourced part of the criminal justice system, though, is what we do or more often don't do when people get out of prison. Probation and parole. Jason Hardy was a parole officer in New Orleans when that state's incarceration rates were the highest in the country. He wrote about his life on the job and the resources he was given to do it in a new book called The Second Chance Club. Jason, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Tell me how it was you came to be a parole officer in New Orleans, because it was a circuitous path, we should say.
It really was. I had spent most of my 20s kind of bouncing around from one profession to another. And I was 29, kind of working in retail and just sort of trying to find something with a little more meaning. And I was just kind of doing some reading on some things that were happening in the criminal justice system. And it just really sounded like a place where someone could really do some good if they got involved. So probation and parole was kind of the job that was available at the time. And so I kind of put my name in the hat and thought I'd go in and see what happened.
Tell me about the first day after you finished your training.
Well, the first day was a bit of a shock. I showed up and I was given 220 case files. Most were struggling with drug problems. Most had been poor for almost all their lives. And kind of the first question was, well, what tools do we have available to help these folks? Mm. And I learned in pretty short order that really the only tool we had was the jail. And that kind of the people who were the best at the job were people who kind of found end arounds. Sometimes that's giving a pep talk. Sometimes that's being a listening post. Sometimes it's letting something slide that, you know, might have gotten him locked up 10 years before. One good thing that was happening when I came aboard, the state was kind of slowly but surely coming around to this idea that locking people up was not really rehabilitating them. And so they were allowing us a little bit of latitude to kind of say, you know what, this isn't a big deal. Let's give this person another shot, kind of try something new with him.
It should be said here that with that latitude did not come extra resources or funding.
No. And that's one of the things that I really would like people to know about this system is that I think it has just tremendous potential in that, you know, when we did get resources and we could put them with the right people, we saw kind of amazing results. But they were so few and far between. I could name probably 50 or 100 people that I dealt with where if I just had the kind of right spot to put them, whether it was a detox or a rehab or just get them some professional counseling, the outcome might have been different. And instead, they ended up back in jail, which, as everybody knows, is the most expensive solution to a social problem.
Tell me, since you mentioned the people you dealt with, tell me about Sheila. Tell me her story.
Sheila was up against a lot. She was living with her mother who'd been fighting a crack addiction for about 20 years. She had dropped out of the 11th grade and wasn't really interested in going back in school. And she was actually on probation because she had flushed her boyfriend's drug stash down the toilet when the police showed up at her house. One of the things that really worked with Sheila, and this really came from just taking the time to talk to her and get to know her, was kind of figuring out, you know, counseling was going to go a long way. And as much as most of my fellow POs and I tried, we weren't trained counselors. And so with Sheila, it came down to getting her in a courtroom-administered program where she was able to meet with a licensed counselor.
You know, on this thing about your fellow POs, the guy you shared an office with, his name was Charles, right, if I remember right?
Yes, that's right.
There was a whole lot of learning you did from him that was not book learning. It was actually being out in the field and going into these houses or dealing with these people and figuring out in the moment how to handle them.
Absolutely. He's someone I'll be indebted to for the rest of my life. He's a true pro. He just could pick up on things that in the early going I really couldn't. You know, he could go into a house and, you know, he could speak with the family. He could kind of look around and he could say, you know, the grandfather is the person in this house who has the influence. That's the person whose side we've got to get on. And just always knew what question to ask to kind of get to the heart of the problem. And in a job where you have limited resources, those are really the skills you need. And he let me kind of beg, borrow, and steal from him and take all his tricks. But on my best days, I was never half as good as he was.
You know, it's well, not funny, but it's interesting that, you know, you talk about him in the epilogue and what he's doing now, and you mentioned he's been doing this for 20 years. And in the epilogue, you say he's counting down every last day of his 18 months till he can be done with this.
And it's not because he doesn't think it's been worthwhile. Yeah. It's just because this work really takes its toll. And even the very best folks in this job have failures. They have people that they can't get to, they can't reach. And I, you know, I certainly think with more resources, we could do better. But there are cases where, you know, you do have the resources and the person you're trying to get them to just isn't quite ready. And I think that more than anything else is what kind of breaks your heart over time. Even the best people at the job still go home some days shaking their heads saying, why couldn't we do more?
Your heart broke, if I remember right from this book, in 4 years, 4 months, and 18 days, and you had to do something else.
Well, maybe a little sooner than that, but I tried to carry on as best I could. But I got to the point where I felt like, frankly, sometimes I would fault people for things that weren't their fault. And that was kind of my warning sign that, you know what, maybe it's time for you to move on to something else.
It's a book called The Second Chance Club, Hardship and Hope After Prison. Jason Hardy wrote it. Jason, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time.
Thanks so much for having me.